Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Narchris Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Bill Eddy's Why We Elect Narcissists and Sociopaths and How We Can Stop, is a political psychology and leadership book about the recurring public appeal of high-conflict leaders. Eddy, a lawyer, therapist, mediator, and co-founder of the High Conflict Institute, applies his work on personality patterns to elections, organizations, and public decision-making. The book does not simply argue that bad leaders exist. It examines why voters, boards, and communities can become attracted to leaders who display grandiosity, blame, dominance, lack of empathy, and a habit of escalating conflict. Its purpose is both diagnostic and preventive. Eddy explains how certain leaders gain trust by presenting themselves as heroic rescuers during a frightening crisis while directing public anger toward a supposedly dangerous enemy. The book is written for citizens, professionals, and organizational decision-makers who want practical ways to recognize destructive leadership patterns before those leaders gain excessive power. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the fantasy crisis triad explains how destructive leaders gain emotional momentum. A central idea in the book is Eddy's fantasy crisis triad, a pattern in which a leader amplifies or invents a crisis, identifies a villain, and presents himself or herself as the only credible hero. The importance of this framework is that it shifts attention from isolated personality traits to a social process. A narcissistic or sociopathic leader does not rise only because of charisma. The leader gains power by giving anxious people a simple emotional script. The crisis creates urgency. The villain gives fear a target, and the hero role justifies concentrating trust and authority in one person. Eddy's analysis is especially concerned with how this triad can override ordinary skepticism. In a tense public environment, people may prefer decisive certainty over careful evidence, and they may accept harsh treatment of the alleged villain as necessary protection. This makes the framework useful beyond national politics. It can also apply to workplaces, community organizations, and institutions where leaders exploit conflict to strengthen personal control. Eddy's contribution is to make the pattern recognizable early, before the group becomes too invested in defending the leader's narrative. Secondly, high-conflict personality patterns are treated as warning signs rather than casual insults. The book distinguishes itself by using narcissistic and sociopathic traits as behavioral patterns rather than as loose political insults. Eddy's professional background in law, mediation, and clinical social work shapes this approach. He focuses on observable tendencies such as chronic blame, lack of empathy, manipulative communication, grandiose self-presentation, impulsive attacks, and win-lose thinking. This matters because public debate often turns psychological labels into partisan name-calling. Eddy instead asks readers to look for repeated conduct and its consequences. Narcissistic leaders may seek admiration, loyalty, and visible superiority, while sociopathic leaders may show a colder willingness to deceive, exploit, and disregard rules. In practice, these patterns can overlap, especially when a leader treats conflict as a tool for advancement. Eddy's analysis does not require readers to diagnose a public figure clinically. The more practical question is whether the person's behavior repeatedly escalates division, weakens accountability, and demands personal loyalty over shared norms. This emphasis helps readers avoid both naivete and overstatement. It provides a structured way to evaluate leaders without pretending that ordinary citizens can make formal psychiatric determinations from a distance. Thirdly, modern media conditions reward simple enemies, dramatic confidence, and constant conflict. Eddy connects the rise of high-conflict leaders to the communication environment in which public life now operates. Leaders who rely on crisis, blame, and heroic self-presentation can be especially effective in media systems that reward attention, emotion, and rapid repetition. A careful leader who explains trade-offs may appear less compelling than a leader who names an enemy and promises immediate rescue. This does not mean media alone causes destructive leadership, but it helps explain why such leaders can scale their influence quickly. The book's reasoning is that high-conflict personalities are often skilled at creating memorable images of strength, certainty, and grievance. These images travel well through headlines, interviews, campaign events, and social media. Audiences may then feel that the leader is authentic because the message is emotionally intense, even when it is misleading or inflammatory. Eddy's warning is not simply to distrust all strong language. Rather, he urges a healthy skepticism toward recurring stories that reduce complex problems to a single villain and make loyalty to one leader seem like the only solution. This media-aware perspective broadens the book beyond individual psychology into social dynamics. Fourthly, historical examples show why institutions must resist surrendering power to a savior figure. The book uses historical parallels. including the rise of authoritarian movements such as Nazi Germany, to illustrate how dangerous the crisis villain hero pattern can become when institutions fail to restrain it. Eddie's point is not that every aggressive leader becomes a dictator, but that destructive leadership becomes far more dangerous when legislatures, courts, parties, boards, or civic groups surrender their checking role. The psychological appeal of a savior figure can pressure institutions to treat normal limits as obstacles rather than safeguards. Once a group accepts the idea that a crisis is existential and a villain is subhuman or treacherous, procedural protections may seem weak or disloyal. This is where Eddie's professional concern with conflict systems becomes important. He is not only analyzing a leader's personality, he is analyzing how surrounding people respond. Enablers, fearful allies, and passive bystanders can make the leader's behavior more consequential than it would be alone. The historical dimension gives the book moral seriousness without making it purely historical. It shows that early warning signs matter, because the cost of waiting can grow as power becomes more centralized and accountability becomes harder to restore. Lastly, prevention depends on voter education, group accountability, and early intervention. The book's practical emphasis is that high-conflict leaders can be stopped or limited when people learn to recognize the pattern early and respond collectively. Eddie argues for education about personality patterns, not as a form of stigma, but as a civic and organizational skill. Voters, board members, hiring committees, and community leaders should ask whether a candidate consistently blames others, manufactures enemies, resists accountability, and presents personal authority as the answer to every problem. Prevention also requires institutions to maintain clear rules and shared decision-making. A high-conflict leader benefits when people respond individually and emotionally, because isolated opponents can be attacked or portrayed as villains. Groups are more effective when they use transparent processes, insist on evidence, and refuse to reward escalating conflict with more attention or power. Eddie's approach is realistic in the sense that it does not promise a simple cure. It asks for repeated practice screening leaders carefully, resisting fantasy crisis narratives, supporting collaborative alternatives, and acting before the destructive leader becomes entrenched. The value of this guidance is that it translates psychological insight into decisions citizens and organizations actually face. In conclusion, Why We Elect Narcissists and Sociopaths and How We Can Stop is most useful for readers who want a practical bridge between political behavior, personality patterns, and institutional responsibility. Voters can use it to evaluate candidates without relying only on party identity or rhetorical confidence. Organizational leaders, board members, mediators, lawyers, and conflict resolution professionals may find it helpful for recognizing similar dynamics in workplaces, associations, and public agencies. Its intellectual benefit lies in making destructive leadership understandable as an interaction between personality, audience anxiety, media reinforcement, and weak safeguards. Its practical benefit is a clearer checklist for skepticism. Look for manufactured crises, simplified villains, heroic self-branding, contempt for limits, and repeated escalation of conflict, compared with many books about authoritarianism, populism, or political persuasion. Eddie's work stands out because it is grounded in the high-conflict personality framework he has developed across legal, therapeutic, and mediation settings. It is less a broad theory of democracy and more a usable warning system for everyday decision-makers. The book is not a substitute for clinical diagnosis or detailed political history, and its solutions require sustained public effort. Its distinctive strength is showing how ordinary people and institutions can identify risky leadership patterns before charisma and fear turn them into authority. If you would like to support Bill Eddie, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.